Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we interview a man who knows his way around a lyric and a novel.
And who knows the way from Massachusetts to Toronto.
Which I clearly don't.
Hey, Patrick, we have been on quite a roll with the celebrity interviews lately, right?
Yeah, we really have. We've been super lucky to have done a bunch of really interesting interviews, over the past month or so. So, you know, it's like one of those hot streaks. You just keep going until it
That's
ends.
Right.
Don't touch it. Let it roll.
Let's keep this going. So,
yeah.
So this show you are listening to is called Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And Patrick, you set up this interview. So why don't you tell the peoples what this is all about?
Yeah, I have been a fan of Joe Pernice for quite a while. I'm going all the way back to his time in a band called the Scud Mountain Boys in the 90s. And saw that he had a new album on Twitter. And I saw that he mentioned on Twitter he had a new record coming out. And I was like, that's unusual. I didn't hear anything about that happening. Or, I was thinking there might be another Pernice Brothers record, which is sort of the group he did after the Scud Mountain Boys. And were together for, better part of 12, 15 years and just had come back in 2019. So all that to say, I just reached out on Twitter and said, hey, Joe, might you be interested in coming on our podcast? And he said, yeah. And we worked out the details. We wanted to make sure his new album was out. It did come out on June 19th. And you'll hear him talk about how it got to be what it is and how it was released.
Yeah, it was great. Interesting guy, very personable. Mm-hmm. And obviously, he's found a way to, within this, dark period, use that for something productive and, ultimately then by sharing it, something good comes out of it, right?
So yeah. And, Joe's an interesting fella. I mean, we've talked about this on our podcast before, but back in the early 90s, up until, mid to late 90s, the terms like alt country and no depression and, all that stuff were not real common terms and had just started to be formulated. But his band, the Scud Mountain Boys, was making a form of that kind of what you would now totally call, all country music. So he was kind of there. I don't think they were necessarily connected to scene was sort of starting to form the genesis of whatever alt country scene, but they did hang around with a lot of indie rock bands and were kind of in the middle of that scene, and that's how I kind of got to know their work. And then later they were signed to Sub Pop and put out a couple records too. So
yep. Okay, so the new record is a Joe Pernice solo album, and it is called Richard, and you can find that on Bandcamp and probably purchase wherever you buy interesting records, right?
Okay. That's right.
So he's going to talk about that album and some other things, and what do you think? Should we get to it?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
So, everybody, Joe Pernice, thank you so much, Joe, for joining Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, well, thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. So great to talk to you. Listeners to our podcast know of my passion for your music. We have a little segment called Perfect Pop, where we talk about an absolutely song that we think is absolutely perfect. And I once did a bit on Cigarette Sandwich from the Scud Mountain Boys. So, but first, Joe, talk about how the last 3 months have been for you as an artist and a human being and living in Massachusetts, right? Is that where you still are?
No, I live in Canada.
You live in Canada?
Yeah, I'm married a Canadian, so I moved to Canada in 2005. I've lived in Toronto for, what year is it, 2020? Yes, so I've lived in Canada for 15 years.
I did not know that. That's amazing. Yep.
But my partner, who I own my record label with, is still in Massachusetts. And most of my family is still there, except for my sister, who I mentioned, who lives in Maryland.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm there usually before, before this the lockdown, I was, you know, I get out there quite a bit.
Yep.
So you're on the right side of the border for what, for current circumstances.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I mean, all joking aside, because it's not funny.
Right.
I'm glad I'm here and not there now, because things are handled quite a bit differently here. Like, you asked what it's been like for me. I think my son just finished eighth grade, and sometime in March, like, they were really fast about shutting school down. They just said, get out, go home. Where they shut it down, they closed everything, and, you know, they were pretty strict about, well, the government here, and the information was, I found it to be pretty good and readily available, and, you know, telling people to stay home, and they really pushed that, and people are good about wearing masks and social distancing and all that stuff. And, you know, it's not over. We're not completely out of the woods up here by any means, but it's definitely, we're in the second phase of reopening, and they're really strict about how they do that. So from, in that regard, it could have been a lot worse. But for me personally, outside of all of the, you know, the bad stuff, you know, the death and illness and the economy freaking out and, you know, people anxious and stressed out, for me, it's been like, this kind of life really suits me, I think. Like, I've reset myself in a bunch of ways. And, like, you know, I realized that I might have been wasting a lot of time doing stuff that, when you can't do it, you realize, oh, I don't miss that at all, you know?
Yeah.
So in a way, and not to, you know, not to make this sound like a good thing, but in a way, it's been, I've taken some positive things out of it for sure.
Good for you. I mean, I think that's a way to tackle it, right, Jim? I mean, you can sort of lay back and have your ears pinned to the wall and just, you know, crawl in a corner, or you can deal with it in a positive way and try to, you know, make something out of your circumstances. So it sounds like that's what happened.
Pretty early on, like, I'm pretty politically active, and I watch politics a lot, American politics, probably too much. And sometime around, really, it was stressing me out. And sometime around February, I just decided to check out of it all. And I realized, you know, there are certain things you can control right now, and there are things you cannot. And so I put my phone down. I stopped looking at news for a good long time, and I'm about to do that again for a little while. I realized again I was probably not only getting more stressed than I needed to be, but it was an enormous waste of time getting sucked into that hole. And when I stopped, you know, broke my addiction to the news, I got a lot of work done, a lot of work.
Did you jump back on in the wake of the George Floyd murder?
I did.
Okay.
That's exactly what brought me back in. That's exactly what took me back in. And now I my wife has been great. And, you know, she's like, you know, give yourself 10 minutes now and then 10 minutes at 3 o'clock and then 10 minutes at whatever. And so I've been trying to, you know, have some willpower, to exercise some willpower and do that. But we're living in remarkable times, and, you know, one can't hide their head in the sand, but you can, you know, but you also have to know when to be good to yourself and keep yourself healthy and check out just for your sanity, you know? So it's a balance. But could I add, a strange thing happened. So when I kind of checked out of the internet and out of tech in that regard, after, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks, I really started to feel like I felt in the 90s prior to even having the internet, where I was always making something. I was always creative. And I realized my thoughts even started changing. Like, the way I started to think, it was really different. And, you know, I'm still not detoxed of the internet or social media, that kind of thing, but I'm really rethinking the value of it, or it's what its beneficial uses are.
Yeah.
In contrast to what the detrimental ones are, you know, what its detriments.
Totally. And let's hope that many people have gone through that rethink because definitely we're addicted to a lot of stuff that we don't need to be. And I love that thing, Jim, about I'm starting to feel like I did in the 90s. Yes. I totally relate to that. Yeah,
I really did. Like I was like, I was just having my thoughts became more complex. You know, I started finishing thoughts and chasing down ideas. Whereas I think there's so much distraction, at least in my own life. I don't mean to speak for other people, but at least in my own life, and not to make the leap into my own music. But I wrote almost an entire album and recorded an album, and it just came to me like in a blaze. You know, like this new record I just made came to me like I was driven in a way that I hadn't felt in a while. You know, and I know that it had something to do with eliminating these certain distractions from my life, you know.
Totally fascinating, and makes a great segue, Joe. The record is called Richard. Currently, yes, you can get it on Bandcamp, and it looks like the vinyl's going like hotcakes, man. You've had quite a few orders, it seems like.
Yeah, we sold a lot of vinyl so far.
And how is that going to work, Joe, just really quick, for those who may be jumping on and ordering, you know, those last copies now? It's going to be delivered in late July, is that right?
Yes, it's being pressed right now, and so then we ship when they come out, when we get them. So, right, you know, that's how it'll work. And we did pre-sales because I don't know, I'm not a massive, like, you know, I don't have an enormous following. So we're always careful about how many records we press just because we don't have, you know, tons of money to burn on it. Sure. So, you know, we didn't press that many of them. And so it was all done by pre-order.
Okay, cool. And, you know, right now, folks, you know, if you're hearing this, go to Bandcamp, Joe Pernice, and check out the record Richard. So take us through this, Joe. I mean, how did this all come about? Did you write it all, you know, since the lockdown? And it's a gorgeous record, I'll tell people. I listened to it again today, you know, for the fifth or sixth time, and just really, really gorgeous. Joe's guitar and singing, beautifully captured.
I act like I don't care, but man, you know I do. And my heart and face only helps to bottle up the truth. When they woke me with the news, oh man, I wished I'd never come to, 'cause I don't think I can span this mountain without you.
If not for this lockdown, would you have made this kind of a record?
Yes, I would have. But to be honest with you, I would not have made it now because I was already, I mean, the idea of making a record where it was just me and a nylon string guitar, pretty spare, I've been wanting to do that. But I've been wanting to do that for a while, but I didn't feel one like I have the songs to do it. I didn't have the songs ready or the songs that lent themselves to that style. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably four or five songs into a Pernice Brothers record already recorded.
Wow.
So I was in the middle of that already on its way when we got shut down. So all of a sudden the Pernice Brothers record I was making was put on hold because I couldn't go record with people anymore. And my wife, who actually works for a living, she took over my studio space as her home office. So I was forced to move into my bike shop in my basement. So I have a bicycle shop, you know, personal use. It's not commercial.
Right.
So I have a shop, and it's just filled with bikes. I'm a freak for bicycles and bike parts of all styles. And I moved there's not a lot of room. So I moved I have a couple of nice microphones. I moved a nice mic and a guitar and my computer to record on. And I just said, the hell with it. I'm going to go to work. And it just started coming out of me. And I think one song I wrote earlier, the rest was all pretty new.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. And it does feel like a piece, folks, when you listen to it. It's got a beautiful sort of song cycle feeling to it. There's an instrumental on there, Joe, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's quite beautiful.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. That's the song I wrote a while ago. It was really strange because this hasn't really ever happened to me either. Whenever I make a record, I usually have a bunch of songs and I end up cutting songs. But this record was kind of written as it was being made, right? And I remember I had one, I felt like I was one song short. And then the song I needed to write just came out. And I was like, Jesus, that's the one. And
wow.
And it was just, it just was one of those things. And it all fell into place. And to be honest with you, though, I now I'm still in my bike shop, and that's where I'm going to record another record. I've already started. It feels good and it feels right. And I'm just going to keep going with it.
Sounds damn good, man. And it seems like that memory is a part of this album, you know, like maybe you were talking about or earlier going back to how you felt in the 90s. But I think of a song like Sullivan Street and, you know, some of the other tunes, like, was memory and sort of kind of recharging your mind part of that, but memory specifically?
Almost certainly. You know, I think I probably write a lot about memory more than the future. So, yeah, I would say for sure. Yes.
So building off of that, the title track, Richard, I mean, that's sort of a kind of like soul searching kind of song for you, right?
And what was I but a boy in old man's skin, hanging on for dreaded life and trying to keep from being seen. I couldn't speak, the words crowding my throat were weaker than a Sunday paper buried under melting snow. Always alone, always meant to be alone. I'm sorry, Richard, that I never said a word. I'm sorry, Richard, now I hear what you have done. Flip a coin of you and me, it's either one.
Yeah, I've been known to search the soul a few times. Yes, yeah, so, you know, even though all of the songs that I write have a certain amount of craft and, you know, artifice, or, you know, you shape things to be right, you might change the truth here or there to fit a narrative, but I never just say I'm going to write a song about this, you know, city and then make it all up. Like, everything, all of the songs that I write all have, you know, at least 30-40% truth in them. Do you know what I mean? They're all mm-hmm. about me. They're all real things, even though I may, like I said, you know, change the truth for a better story.
Right.
But all of them are very personal. So I never am like, I'm not one of those guys who says I could write a song about anything at any time, because I just can't. I have to write the songs that come to me, you know? I forget what your question was, but I know I wanted to circle back to that with that thought, but
well,
I now
the
lost
song,
myself.
The song Richard, how it what, did that help you work through something, I guess, from your past, or?
Yeah, you know, yeah, you think about people, their paths, you think about your own path, you think about things you might regret, you think about things you might do differently, you think about things that you're glad you did that way. So, you know, I guess for me, because I'm trying to write personally, I'm always searching myself for the truth, but also what I believe about things or how I feel about things. Because it's all personal, I'm always searching myself, is what I guess I'm trying to say in a very long-winded way.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Joe, that you talked about the fact that you loved you know, the sort of the idea of the bike shop recordings. Can you expound on that a little bit? I mean, it, you know, did you love the vibe? Do you want to do more solo, you know, acoustic stuff in the future, or
probably both of those things?
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I think this, I found a kind of sound and a voice on this record that I think is something I've been searching for a long time. Like, I think I don't know why I never did it before. I know why, because I love melody and I love instruments and I love arrangements. So sometimes instead of leaving a solo vocal with a solo guitar, you know, sometimes you go on to hear a second guitar and then you want to hear strings and then you want to hear a drum fill. But and that's great. And I will always make records that way. But I think I found a different kind of voice, a different kind of sound that I need to explore more to see if I can, you know, max it out, to see what I can get out of that, you know. But to answer your question about being in my bike shop, because I don't require a lot of equipment and it's easy to work in that space, and also I don't know if either of you guys have done much recording, but for me, sometimes when you're going into a studio, it's kind of, you know, even that expression, I'm going into the studio.
Yeah.
It's like this event, and it becomes kind of, it becomes kind of unnatural because it gets built up as this thing. Or, you know, when I was down in my bike shop, I'm just sitting around all the things that I love, and it's so chill. And, you know, actually didn't even know I was making a record till I was probably four or five songs into this. And then I played them for a friend of mine and I said, what do you think about this? And she was like, you know, my friend Rachel Lichtman, who's a, you know, filmmaker, and she does this thing called Network 77 and this other show called Musique. I played her a few songs. She's like, you must put this out.
Yeah.
And so I didn't even really know I was doing that until I was, you know, a good way into it. And, you know, someone kind of slapped me in the face and said, what are you crazy? Put that out. it really was like that.
Did you think maybe that these would be like demos for something you would do later when you could get in the studio or anything like that? Or how did you approach it?
I didn't think about it at all.
Okay.
Jim, I was just thinking at some point, because I was just thinking I need to work and I not work for money, but I need to keep my head. I need to keep moving because it was a crazy time. You know, like this was at the beginning of being locked in and you're wondering if, you know, what the hell's going to happen. I mean, there was no toilet paper, Jim.
That's right. That's right. So it's born of necessity, I suppose. But this could be your Nebraska, Joe, and then you're going to follow up with some big anthemic record after this, right? Some big overly produced thing.
You never know. I mean, I'll tell you what, man, the four or so songs that we already recorded are pretty massive, actually. There's some heavy, like, there are a couple that I recorded are among the heaviest I've made yet, or like the most guitar driven, big drum sounding, you know, it's quite large. And this was really unexpected for me.
Very interesting.
So, and just one last thing on that. I know it was sort of born of necessity that you had the time, you had this space to work in. You obviously had some inspiration, but did it also, putting out a record like this, did it also sort of fit your mood at the time? You know, like, could you have made a record like this in other times, right?
Probably. I mean, I think I probably could have, but honestly, I think I've been distracted in a way. And the other thing this did, because I was because the equipment I have at home is, you know, I don't have a huge studio at home. And I'm not a great musician, right? I was bound by what I had. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to, you know, try to make something moving out of what I have, which is I'm going to play this nylon string guitar and I'm going to use two tracks on this machine, one for my voice and one for the guitar. And I'm going to sing and play live and maybe do an overdub or two. And in a way, I don't know if I would have done that just yet, because right now I never had I didn't have any other options. You know what I mean? Right. Like, and then it just started to sink to me. I always remember Bob Pollard, reading a thing by Bob Pollard, who was talking about, you know, the low fidelity of those early, you know, the GBV stuff. Yep. And I remember him saying, we were broke. We couldn't go into a studio. This is what we had to do. And they kind of, you know, gave themselves to the technology that they had, or the limitations of their limitations became their kind of, became their sound. Right. And I think that's what I was shooting for, not low fidelity, but to make what I have, what I end up with. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, totally. Yep.
Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, totally.
And in a way, I think this record, more than any other, I think about the very first album I made, the Scud Mountain Boys record, what do you call, Pine Box. There's something similar to this record with that record, probably that it's all live, right? That record, Pine Box, was recorded completely live.
Mm-hmm.
But when we made that record, we didn't think we were making a record. We thought we're just going to sit around and we're going to record these songs. And then that was back in the old days where you thought we'll use it as a demo to get signed so we can go do it the right way.
Right.
And then, so there was no expectation and it was so casual, and we were able to indulge ourselves in making it sound however we wanted within the capabilities of our technology at the time. We were able to just be kind of free. And that really comes through on that record, whether one likes it or not. You can't deny that there's a sound and a vibe to it. And,
totally.
And I think that this record I just made has the same kind of thing going for it, and that you can't, there's something undeniable about it. Whether this record that I just made is considered good or not, there's no doubt in my mind that there's a sound and a vibe to it that you can't fake. And
right.
And that has something to do with not having a lot of expectation, at least as that pertains to me. Mm. I'm sure that's the case.
Yep. There is no auto-tune on this record.
No. There's no, every single vocal and every single guitar is live. I played every song live. There are some songs I could probably look at the list and tell you that I played one time and that was it. And I was like, I'm not doing it again. Sullivan Street, that's no joke. Sullivan Street, I recorded that song once on my phone as a voice memo where I didn't have all the words. I finished the words. I probably ran through it once or twice. I recorded it once, and that was the end of that. That was it.
Pretty shadows rolled around on the sheets in the city of our love. Only one side's clean. Henry James and buzzed refrains, we got so high. When we kissed you, split your bottom lip on me. That was Sullivan Street.
So really interesting to talk about how that album evolved, right, Jim?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, you know, have been experiencing feelings similar to what Joe talked about there. And how cool is it that he has a place, a bike shop, to be able to go down into and create something as pretty as this record? I mean, it's very exquisitely captured, even though it is just a voice and a guitar for the most part, but maybe a spare overdub here and there, like you said, but it's quite something.
It's a really beautiful record, and I encourage people to check it out. It has, you know, for lack of a better word, maybe this word gets thrown out a lot, but it just feels very honest. And and I think, you know, that's something that, you know, hopefully anyone who's a big music fan can really appreciate. So
totally. Very well said. And just, you know, I felt like talking to Joe, felt the same way. You know, he was just very honest about how we created that project. And, you know, I loved some of his responses to our questions. It's really cool. I mean, yeah.
So much so that we're going to have him back tomorrow, right? Part two of the interview that we did with Joe Pernice. So you'll want to check that out because, of course, you're listening pretty frequently.
Every day. That's what I find myself doing.
That's right. Okay, so let's get to that. If Sounds anyone good. Would like to contact us at all and comment about Joe Pernice, Pernice Brothers, Scud Mountain Boys, any of that stuff, you can call and leave a message and we'll put your voice on an upcoming show. I swear we are going to do some fan mail episodes coming up here soon. I think we're going to carve out a week to get caught up on all of that. So that'll be coming up soon. Anyway, the number to leave that message is 612-440-1984. Yep. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. All of those at suburbspod. All right. Let's do this, man. Let's move on to part two.
Great.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
You should have came. Someone lit a fire. You should have came. Somebody tripled off the wall. You should have came. We all were having a ball. Oh, you should have came. You should have came. It was the cream of the summer. You should have came, I cooked it all the way through. You should have came, we all were wondering what happened to you. Oh, you should have came.
I mean, there was no toilet paper, Jim.